Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. All right, here we go with the Thursday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so if you didn't manage to get over there and check out yesterday's blog, swing on by. It's hanging out over there waiting for you to read it, so make the stop there. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and follow that link over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
All right, and Dan was answering me, asking me a question just as we were getting to start the podcast. And yes, Dan, I do watch Dark Side of the Ring, and I've begun recording it so I can kind of watch it at my leisure. I randomly stumbled into it just flipping channels. The first one I ended up seeing was the Von Erich one they did last season. And I've just been kind of keeping up with it after that. But, yeah, it's on Vice. Have you watched it, or do you watch it, or are you going to watch it?
I'm intending to. I have to double-check because, you know, I have Sling. And, you know, all this COVID crap, with all the COVID crap going on, you know, all the add-ons that they offer have been giving free previews. You know, like, I mean, I'm super excited to have a free preview of Hallmark Channel through the end of April. Yeah, you know, love that channel. I, you know, I'm not going to knock you if you like it or not. I just, that's not my thing. But, you know, so I'm just having, it's a little bit more, it's difficult now because, you know, going from having cable, Comcast, or, you know, what you have for UVerse. But, you know, when you buy those packages, you get tons of channels. So condensing to Sling, I don't know the amount of channels, but, I mean, my guide is pretty slim, so it's quick and easy to go through. But now that they've added all these extras on, you know, for this time period, it's been a little lengthy to try to get through. And last night, I was just scrolling through to see what was on, and I didn't realize that Vice took on and is – you know, continuing to produce Shipping Wars, which was one of my ridiculous reality shows I used to watch on, you know, whatever channel the other Wars was on. You know, so I was excited to see that. And, of course, while watching that, they have commercials. And one of the commercials was for the Dark Side of Wrestling. And I just thought it was so funny because last night I went through and, you know, I took your advice and I actually watched I watched Cody Rhodes wrestle some Sean Price, I think that was his name, on whatever, was that AEW? That's the channel, or the, so, you know, it was interesting to have, you know, a couple of the guys on the ringside. You know, they've got a pretty nice studio. They blacked out the, you know, the sides where the cameras aren't, so. You know, I don't know. I think for me, if I were to start watching it again, I would get too involved. And I don't know. I don't know about the WWE product because every time I turn it on, I'm just like, man, this is such crap. You know, I don't know if the pay-per-views are better, but the TV shows just, you know, are definitely not for me. But, you know, at the same time, as cool as it is that I would try to watch some of this stuff, you know, a guy that I never met, but I'm sure you knew more, was Colt Cabana. I was like, oh, that's cool. Colt's on TV now. But, you know, all the other guys, it's just like, I really can't get into it because, I mean, I was watching Cody Rhodes almost 20 years ago, it seems like. I don't know. When did he start, So watching him when he first came into WWE to begin with, and then it kills me that, Goldust is still trying to wrestle, or, is still working. I'm like, geez, how old is he? But, then again, growing up as Dusty's kid, I'm sure he started wrestling when he was probably like 7, so... You know how the old days went, but I just thought it was hilarious because NXT was on, AEW was on, the Stadium Channel had Ring of Honor on last night as I'm scrolling through the guide, and then it just kind of blew up when I'm watching Shipping Wars. It has nothing to do with wrestling, and I see the commercial for Dark Side. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me! It's like we're in like wrestling heaven these days. So if you're a wrestling fan, God bless you. There's so much programming for you to get into. And, to the commercials they're broadcasting, of course, start with Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, man, this is some stuff I would probably definitely eat up. So I have searched it. So I hit it on for my DVR. I actually had to clear out my DVR because I only have 50 hours of programming you can record. And I had shows that I started recording, but we just never ended up watching, so I had to delete a bunch of crap out. But
yeah,
I'm like, man, I'm sure all these stories I know, it'll be interesting to kind of get, more talk on it because, Vince McMahon and WWE has owned the rights to so much of this stuff that, nothing's ever put out about it. So it'll be kind of cool to get into it. I forget the guy's name. Was it Jim something from the old WCW days? He's like, man, this is the kind of stuff that will really turn you off if you are into wrestling. So it's kind of interesting, and I'm actually looking forward to watching this because, the Von Erichs, that one I think is a crazy story. And and it's funny because, 10 years ago or so, it was always a joke that I said to you was all the great wrestling stories that, are put out there. And, take the word great for what it is and not so much as glorifying, but all the main, all the good wrestling stories all end with, and now he's dead. You and I talked about that, and and it's just the way it is. And fortunately, in my first wrestling match, Machine, the tag team we worked against, the big scary guy walked into the locker room. This is backstage stuff that we don't talk about, but walked into the locker room, looked at me, and said, "You're gonna die," and then walked away. And then 5 minutes later, we were going out to wrestle this guy, and the way it works out, unfortunately, very unfortunately, his partner Steve, who you were really good friends with, passed away. So that's how I was able to have that story for myself. That and my Jimmy Snuka, who he's got some pretty bad stuff attached to him from the early 80s. It'll be interesting to kind of recapture this show and just see all the stuff. How much have you watched, or any of them that kind of stood out to you as around the dead wrestling stories?
No, yeah, they've all been really solid.
Is it worth watching?
Yeah, it's if you're a wrestling fan and not so much, you obviously you got to suspend some disbelief, but, not where you're over the top believing every single thing that goes on in the ring is true, and you understand that the outcomes are predetermined and how things work, you're very much going to enjoy this because you see the backstage stuff. Like last week, they did New Jack, and there's a lot of crazy stuff that went on with New Jack when he was working his way through the ranks. Well, you know, he freely admits sitting in the locker room doing cocaine before going to the ring, and he mentions it multiple times. You know, so it's just, I mean, the things they point out, like the Benoit one was the season opener. They did a two-parter on that, and that was good. There were a couple, you know, I guess the best way to say it is it probably didn't need to be a two-parter. They probably could have done it all in one part. But, like, some of the ones from last year, if you run across them, the Bruiser Brody one is really good about how he got killed in Puerto Rico and kind of the cover-up where the guy never got even charged. There's a really interesting one on Gino Hernandez, and I know he may be a little harder to remember for wrestling fans because while he was a big star in Texas, he never really was a big star anyplace else, and I don't think he ever wrestled for WWE. But there, you know, they had, like, there was always a question on if it was a mob hit that killed him, so they delve into that. And you know, the Von Erich one, of course, I mean, any wrestling fan knows the Von Erich history and the insane amount of tragedy that family went through. And Kevin does the show. So imagine how difficult that is for him.
Oh, wow.
He's the last of the brothers remaining. So, you know, it's very interesting getting his viewpoint on it. And he doesn't really, you know, obviously he's not going to come out and say super negative things, but he doesn't sugarcoat anything when they're talking to him. So it's pretty good, and it's definitely worth a watch if you were a wrestling fan or if you still are a wrestling fan. You know, I'm not a weekly consumer anymore. You know, I watch bits and pieces of it here. Like, you watched what I believe was the AEW main event, and I think I watched the second match. Which was the women, who I thought were really good. So, you know, and I didn't end up seeing any NXT. I know they had I read the results. I always try to read the results just to keep up. And I know they did a ladder match, and then I think one other real long kind of empty arena match, which I thought was humorous because technically the arenas have been empty for weeks now.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, just kind of one of those things, but yeah, you know, if you get a chance, you know, definitely check it out and, you know, tell me what you think. I'd be interested to get your side of it there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not jumping up and down for a lot of the programming now, but when I saw that and just kind of the way they've introduced it and the fact that none of this looks like studio produced, you know, I can't think of what's his name from WCW, you know, the manager with the big mouth. Come on, Big Jack.
Jim Cornette.
Name. Jim Cornette. How could I forget that name? The old tennis racket. You know, he's sitting there with, oh my God, he's sitting there in his, I'm assuming his, you know, as they call it, a den, you know, which, I mean, he definitely is still a part of that wrestling scene. And you know exactly what I mean when I'm looking at the commercial and what is he wearing? A t-shirt of himself. So he's got that promoter still ingrained in him, you know. I don't know if he promoted or any of that stuff, you know, his whole background, but that right there just tells me diehard wrestler, you know, he will live and breathe this industry because he's wearing his damn shirt. And I'm sure, you know, he's gotten sales off of it just by the commercial alone. But you know, seeing the Chris Benoit thing and then, you know, definitely New Jack, you know, it's just, I must have stabbed the guy 9 times. And how the hell are you not in jail, you know? Of course, he's not following me.
Yeah, when you watch
it,
they go into that. He actually explains that story.
I'm just hoping that nothing was mentioned about a local guy whose head would grow tremendously if New Jack mentioned about chasing this kid around the locker room pretending like he's going to stab him. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
No, that one did not come up. So there, because there were a couple incidents with him. Like, he was in Oshkosh once, and one of the guys went up to him, and this kid, and I think we may be talking about the same kid, just a huge mark for himself. And he goes, "Well, you know, you don't really staple people with that thing, do you?" And
Nugent goes, hang on,
I'll go get it out of the car. He chased the kid around with it for probably 30 minutes wanting to staple him because he really put staples in people. That wasn't, you know, as they would call in the business, a work. That was legitimately putting staples in people.
Oh, wait, did that make the programming or no?
Well, that didn't make it, fortunately.
Okay.
So, yeah, because okay. we would have never lived that down if that would have happened. That's just a story I know really well because I was in the locker room. You know what I mean? I actually met New Jack on a couple occasions in the locker room, and luckily for me, he was super nice to me. So, but I don't think he was high.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, when you go into them, and like last night's, I'm really interested. I didn't realize this, and I think what helps these is there's no WWE involvement, so they're not WWE produced, and we're not rehashing history. Like, you know, let's face it, Vince likes the kind of they always look good, and
yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand it's his business, and he needs that. You know, he never wants them to look good. So without his involvement, you get a lot more of the truth coming out. You know, and last night they did Brawl for All, and I don't even know if you remember that. I don't know if you were watching that. But that Vince actually, he wanted to do a legitimate tough man tournament. And the object of it was to get Steve Williams over because Steve Williams was a legitimate badass. And McMahon wanted him to steamroll through all these guys and win this tournament. And I guess he didn't look into a lot of guys' backgrounds because Williams ended up matched up with Bart Gunn, not Billy Gunn, who had a long and really established career, but Bart Gunn, who was a former bouncer and tough guy. You know, he was in tough man competitions before, and he ended up knocking Williams out. And when Williams went to the mat, he tore his hamstring. So not only did Williams not win the tournament, but he needed surgery, and that basically ended his WWE career before it even got started.
Wow.
So, and then Gunn went on to win the tournament because he was the legitimately toughest guy in it, and the reward was you got to face, do you remember Eric Butterbean Esch, the boxer?
Yes.
Yeah, your reward was you got to box him in a 3-round exhibition. Now, tough guy or not, a professional boxer, if you don't have any boxing training, as Conor McGregor learned, is going to whoop your ass. Butterbean just destroyed Bart Gunn. And the funny thing about it is what was unknown to, I think, a lot of people is McMahon wanted to do it again in NXT. He didn't learn his lesson from the fiasco the first one was. They were going to bring it back as a competition where the winner was awarded a WWE contract. And luckily there were people backstage, you know, the writers and stuff talked him out of it. Because, I mean, the first one was just such a cluster, you know what, because you know, obviously you and I both know you can't predict a real outcome.
No.
So, you know, this was, you know, basically they get a lot of the story from a former creative guy who was with the company for a very long time. And, you know, he goes into detail. So I'm really interested to see how this one plays out from last night. I normally record them and then watch them over the weekends since, you know, I'm not supposed to be going out. But, yeah, they're, you know, I mean, they're definitely a really good watch. You know, again, as long as you're not a, I don't know if you'd call it true believer or something to that effect, where, you know, you understand how things work in the business. And, I mean, you don't even need to know an internal understanding like you and I have. You just need to have a basic grasp of kind of reality with what goes on. And I really think you'll enjoy it when you get to watch it.
Oh, looking forward to it. So I don't know. I picked it up, and you know they're plugging it on that channel. So
yeah.
Like, oh, that's pretty pretty interesting. I didn't even know that was available.
Yeah, no, that's how, you know, like I said, I stumbled across it flipping channels. You know, and it was like Dark Side of the Ring. Oh, what's this? You know, and they've done some other wrestling related shows. You know, I know Vice had a program called The Wrestlers, and I don't remember the guy's name who did it, but you know, he talks about how he's a lifelong fan, and he got pretty good backstage access to a lot of the bigger, you know, like the one promotion he got that is getting kind of big is called Evolve. And, you know, they're looked upon as a really up-and-coming promotion. And he got a lot of access there. And then he got quite a bit of access in Japan, especially to the Stardom promotion, which is an all-women's league. He got some good access there from them. You know, and the interesting thing about Stardom is, like, you probably wouldn't know any of their guys, but if you've watched WWE, they now have Asuka and Kairi Sane. And then there's a girl in NXT wrestled last night. I think it's Io Shirai. They all came. That's how WWE found them. They all came out of that Stardom promotion. So, you know, and I've, you know, WWE changes their names. You don't get to keep the same name. But yeah, so he had really good access to that. And you know, it's kind of interesting when you see it. You know, because you and I know a little more about that. You get to see the backstage stuff. So they've done some interesting wrestling stuff on Vice, you know, non-WWE related, which, of course, again, I'm going to say is the gigantic point because, you know, when you get WWE involved, you know, you're not going to get the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
No, you're not.
You know, because speaking of that, I don't know if you saw this, but I caught that, the Page movie they made called Fighting With My Family. You know, and I always kind of wanted to see it. I was like, okay. And I ran into the exact same problem with that is there's kind of a lot of stuff that you see that you're like, yeah, there's absolutely no possible way this ever actually happened like this. And I know the one segment, and I guess technically it's a spoiler alert because I believe they closed the movie with it. You know, she makes her debut on Raw and she ends up winning the women's title. And I actually remember watching that. It happened absolutely nothing like they actually shot it in the movie. Because as we know, Raw is live. They have a thing where she's supposed to be going out to make her entrance, and she's scared and she doesn't want to come out of the locker room, and she calls her brother on the phone in England to talk to him first. Now, you and I both damn well know you're not holding up a live show so this girl can make a phone call. So I guarantee you that maybe it did happen, but it didn't happen the way they laid it out in the movie because they weren't going to hold up Raw for this to go down. So I got a kick out of that. And then the whole entire sequence, the way the movie ends and she wins and is victorious and this, you know, I'm different than all the other girl kind of thing. It didn't go down like that. So I was like, well, okay, I guess they got to take their liberties here and there, or maybe they honestly believe that's how it happened, but I saw it on TV and I know it didn't go down like that on live TV. So, but that's, you know, that's WWE for you. Cause I believe they've produced other things where they've just kind of left out what you would describe as big chunks of the truth. So, but, you know, again, they're a business and they have to come out on the positive end of this. You know, they can't come out looking like the bad guy. So, like, okay, no problem.
No, not, I mean, obviously, they got to keep themselves looking in the bright light.
Yeah.
I will say I think the funniest that, I was close to with, not close to, but had a girl who was backstage, you know, nervous as could be. I thought she was going to pee herself or throw up. I don't know which one you wanted to call.
Or both.
But, yeah, both. You know, that was around the time The Wrestler came out, you know, with, what's his name, Mickey Rourke. Revitalized his career, even though, you know, that movie is what pretty much killed wrestling for me. Because of someone who looked exactly like him that we both know. But, you know, I'll never forget, you know, being backstage with the girl and she's freaking out and I just looked her dead in the eyes because she had this, like, she had this notebook where, you know, she, I don't know if she scripted her matches. The girl she was up against, they had probably wrestled several times already. But, you know, she was freaking out, like, you know, oh, I'm gonna mess up or whatever. And, you know, I just looked her in the face and I was like, well, how about you be the heel and she's the baby? Oh, yeah, that'll work just great. And then just stormed off. I'm like, are you going to cry? What are you doing?
So, yeah, well, you know, you run into those things. I mean, we've had, you know, I have plenty of stories of, you know, guys doing stupid stuff or, you know, however these things work or whatever you think, it's really not as organized as some people would think. You know, that's quite humorous. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, I think when I first started wrestling, we talked, you know, and I guess we could kind of give away how things go. You know, we talked about what was going to happen. But, you know, I think aside from, you know, being in a tag team, it was definitely a little bit easier because you had time to stand on the apron and whatever. You know, our opponents, we discussed kind of what was going to happen, you know, the here, the there. But when, you know, when we were new, we were just excited to be out there, I guess you could say. And then, you know, you just kind of listened to the older guy. And I think it made it easier because we were baby faces, they were heels. So, you know, the heel controls the match to begin with. So, you know, I found that made it harder. I'm not going to say we were the last of the last, but we, in our, you know, area, I feel like we were definitely the last of that generation that were trained that way. So, you know, come 10 years later when I'm trying to wrestle, you know, in a tag team wrestling with new kids, they had no concept of just going out there and working. And they also had no concept of, you know, giving, just going back and forth and getting the crowd into it. And, you know, I'll never forget, I was put up against a couple kids. And, you know, and every time they tried to double team me, I would get out of it. And, you know, to try to sell and make them, you know, bigger heels. But instead of, you know, for instance, the guy had me, my arms up and, you know, his partner was supposed to jump off the apron and clothesline me or something. But they took so damn long that, you know, I just ducked out of the way and he took out his partner. And instead of selling it, you know, the kid, you know, fell down and then immediately got back up. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And, you know, later on, I'm like, well, I really didn't talk to them after that because he pulled my mask so tight I couldn't breathe. So I was, you know, I was done for half the night. And, you know, they finally watched the match and we kind of talked about it. And I was like, you know, that's what was going on. You know, you just don't, you know, as the way the wrestling goes, as a guy taking moves, you just don't sit there and wait for it. You know, what idiot would do that, in, you know, in real life to begin with, let alone in, you know, in fake professional wrestling. Come on now, we got to all work together. So, you know, it's interesting. I remember watching guys having a full-on notebook paper every single step of what they were going to do. You know, and then they go out there, they work their match, they come back. They're like, what did you think? I go, well, you know, I'm like, I watched a couple minutes of your match, and all I could see is that you and your opponent were constantly thinking about what you were going to do next. So I go, I could tell you scripted it. So after like 3 minutes, I just stopped watching it. No offense.
Yeah, it's definitely a different, you know, call it era or however you want to look at it with the way things are done. You know, I mean, like, you at least got to experience the everybody in the same locker room deal. When I started, the heels were in one locker room and the babies were in the other locker room, and you didn't see the guy you were going to wrestle. You know, you saw him for 2 minutes at pre-show so they could run down the card and tell you what was going to happen, and then you didn't see him until you got in the ring, so everything had to be called in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think that was the better thing, you know, as long as you knew kind of what the finish was. You just kind of get there. I remember...
You know, and I mean, you know, what it helped do is it helped settle down the ridiculousness of today's wrestling, where, you know, they plan all this out so you hit 8,000 what they call high spots and the matches don't make any sense. So, you know, then, you know, it settled everybody down because you couldn't talk about, oh, yeah, okay, well, let's do this or let's do that, and then I'll go up here and do this, and, you know, you catch me, and we'll do this, you know, double, triple, quadruple, hurricanrana, and I'll land on my feet, the stuff like that, you know, it cut them down because you couldn't set it up, so...
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, with kind of coming into that age where everyone was planning everything is why I used to piss people off. You know, guys that we were working against, guys I was friends with, and not to say that I pissed them off, but I definitely got under their skin because, you know, while they're all going over match for match, you know, move for move, I kind of wandered off from, you know, talking to you or, you know, tying my boots or, hey, are you even listening? Yeah. You're the baby and I'm the heel. And then I get the dirty look, you know. You know, I'm like, that'll be fine when we all get out there. Just go out, you know, just relax. You guys are too uptight. You know, I used to piss people off. And then, you know, the other side of it is whether I was, you know, vetted to win or lose, you know, to me that never really mattered. But, you know, I was, you know, I don't know if it's just that old school mentality, learning from you and then watching the old WCW stuff, because that's where you really learned to wrestle, was watching the old WCW stuff. You know, I did everything I could to make sure the guy I was up against, while he may be going over that night, I'm going to do some stuff to make him maybe give up, maybe quit. I'm not going to hurt him, you know, break a leg or anything like that, but definitely going to do some stuff in the ring to mislead him and, you know, kind of piss him off, you know, because I felt like that was the greatest thing is a real reaction. Because if you get a real reaction out of your opponent in a wrestling ring, that reaction goes to the crowd and those people really believe it, you know, and that's the one thing that I think is lost. You know, there was a time where I gave up, you know, wrestling and I was refereeing and, you know, I went outside because I thought it was intermission time. I was the only ref that night. I went outside because I thought it was intermission. I come back in, and they've got a match going on. And they're like, what are you doing? Get in the ring. And, you know, the one guy didn't kick out. And I counted to three. And they're like, no, it was only two. I'm like, no, it was three. And, you know, I started this big argument live in front of an entire crowd. And I got to the point where I took my shirt off and I threw it in the announcer's face. I'm like, you want to continue this damn match? You ref it. And, I mean, the expressions on the wrestler's face, the ring announcer, and the crowd, you know, everyone was buying it. They thought, they didn't know that that was real. They thought it was part of the show. And, you know, I didn't find that out until later on because, you know, 3 months later I ran into a kid. He's like, oh, you're not reffing anymore? I'm like, no, dude, I quit. He's like, that was for real? I didn't know that was for real. I'm, you know, so, and I think even, you know, the time where I wore a mask and, you know, you were working that company at the time and you had this big setup, and when we revealed that it was me, you know, I didn't think anyone would even know. And the stunned silence when I took that mask off was just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of amazing, you know. So, you know, there's definitely ways to make, you know, and that's what it was. I think what I loved about it was, yeah, it was choreographed, so to speak. It was acting. But if you could do it the right way, you get those fans, you know, into it, and they're believing everything you do, even though it's not totally real. Even though all the injuries you and I have suffered were 100% real.
Yeah, that's always the thing. Oh, you know, when people, oh, you do that fake crap. Yeah, it's like, God, please tell my knees I did that fake crap and they don't hurt like they do. Mm-hmm. I would love for that to be the case right now. You know, that would be fantastic if you could figure out a way to do that, you know. Well, you know, like the one thing we were taught that I know is a lost art now just from meeting some of the younger wrestlers is, we were taught if you could go out and have a great match, by the time the next show came around and the people came back to see you, they would have forgotten if you won or lost that match. They would just remember if they saw a good match or not. It'd be like, oh, yeah, I saw this guy last month. He's really good. You know, but somehow it got to the point, and that's like one of the things I tried to do when we were working together with your cousin, you know, with his fed, was when we brought guys in, I always tried to have them lose their first match to see how they would react to it. And, you know, there were guys who didn't take it very well. I actually had one guy just happen to talk to a guy who ended up being a close friend of mine, and he didn't know that, complain about how he had to lose and how he didn't like to lose, and I didn't know what to do with, you know, his character, so to speak, because I had him losing a match. And it was just like, yeah, I don't think we can use this guy. And, you know, like, I know we had another guy we brought in who was, you know, supposed to be this great wrestler, and he was a great guy, and he had a gimmick that really played to face, but he was a heel everywhere he wrestled. And I went up to him and I said, look, I said, I want you to try to be a baby tonight. I said, I think you've got a really good shot at being a baby face, and we can make a really big run with this, because we had a heel champion at the time who needed challengers. He pouted so much that his match sucked. I mean, really sucked. It was easily the worst match on the card, and we never brought him back again because he cried about not getting to be a heel. So you meet some really odd people, and now, you know, back in the day when I started, if either of these guys would have pulled that crap, they would have been booked in another match, and they would have legitimately gotten the you-know-what kicked out of them. You know, the promoter would have put them in with the toughest guy in the fetter, as they call them. You know, some guys call them shooters. Other guys back in the day called them hookers, where, you know, these were the guys who could protect themselves and you couldn't mess with them. And they would have got roughed up really well and taught a lesson. You know, sadly, there aren't too many of these guys left anymore in today's wrestling, because, you know, there's a fed on every corner and everybody thinks he's a wrestler. But, yeah, it's just, it's unbelievable the mentality you run into from guys in, like, a sport that, you know, you and I both know is, it's a predetermined outcome. You know, and I mean, it's not like you get a bigger payday if you win or if you lose. I mean, I know they try to convince the fans of that, but that's not true. You know, everybody's getting basically the same crappy $20 on the indie scene. So, but yeah, I mean, just unbelievable. Well, you know, we had the problem with that one guy who wanted to do a gimmick where we lowered him from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And it was like, how much production do you think we have for these shows? You know, this isn't WWE. So,
yeah, and if you put a 10-foot ladder in the building, you were touching the ceiling, so it made no sense.
Right. you know, it was just, you know, and it's like, hey, great, you know, you got all these great ideas that cost almost $10,000 to do. You know, where do you think, and, you know, I mean, this is stuff that a Ring of Honor wouldn't do, and they're probably the biggest quote-unquote indie promotion out there. You know, they don't have that kind of money to spend, but you think some little podunk once a month running in, you know, a VFW hall is going to have the kind of money to put this on? It's like, come on. But, you know, that's how some of these guys think.
Yeah, and, you know, that was one of the, I don't know, he was a decent kid, but sometimes I was like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm going to have my own friend.
He was a decent kid, and he had talent. He just couldn't get his head out of his ass. And I mean, it was cool.
You didn't hear the talks about having floating orbs as ring announcers.
No.
You know, the one thing that surprised me, and, you know. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you you guys were hugely over, and then when we did the thing with you, he called about you getting the turn and not him. And I was like, you knew the plan all along. This was what was going to happen with Dan.
Well, and not only that, what he failed to pay attention to was I didn't turn into a super badass heel. I turned into the scumbag heel that everyone hated and didn't really, you know, it wasn't like the Stone Cold Steve Austin heel. It was the true heel that, I don't know, I played my part, you know, and even after the show, some of the guy's girlfriends, man, I can't believe you ran away like a little punk, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I would just smile because I'm like, you know, it's like a character and not real life, you know. But
that's what heels used to do. You know, until Steve Austin came along, that's what heels did. You know, there were very few badass heels like Steve Austin. You know, and then he came along and changed the business, and I'm sure you ran into it, you know, where, you know, guys wanted to be Stone Cold. It's like, no, I don't want you to be Stone Cold. I want you to be, you know, Joe Smith that you're supposed to be. But, yeah, in essence, you know, he really had a way of killing the indie scene, because, I mean, you'd go to an indie show and every heel would be Steve Austin. And they'd be like, really?
Yep.
Do we, you know, why the hell, you know, I mean, then there were people who didn't want to pay $10 to see that. That's when you know you're in trouble. You know, when you can't get a couple hundred people to give you $10 to watch a wrestling show, give up, because it's over.
Yeah. Well, people, you know, it's, talk to us, because when my cousin and I, we were heels and we had our first run at Tag Champs, you know, we were huge. We were over. We were hugely over. We only had three moves, maybe four, you know, but we played the crowd. We pissed off the crowd legitimately. I mean, there were reviews online that, God, if I have to sit through another body count match, you know, and I'd find these people and I'd get in their face. You know, I would just, you know, I would yell at kids and their dad would yell at me and I would look at him and tell him to sit down. You know, I legitimately pissed people off, you know, so much so that I went into the bathroom once and one of the fans that I was teasing, and, you know, I'm not homophobic or anything, but, you know, other people are. And when you rile some men up, you know, these two guys were just trash talking me the whole time. And I looked the one in the eyes and I said, well, it's very nice of you to bring him on a date for Valentine's Day. And, ooh, I got under their skin so bad, I had to use the bathroom, and it wasn't a number one. And they went into the bathroom after me and shut off the lights. Like, I legitimately pissed people off.
We had a guy years back, and I can't remember his real name. I think it was Mike or Mitch or something like that. he was so good at being a heel that people would wait for him after the show and want to fight him. And I was like, dude, you are so freaking over. That's exactly what you want. You know, and they would, like, sneak him out different entrances to prevent him from being beaten up. Because, I mean, there would be groups of, you know, large fat men like me out there waiting to fight him. that's when you're doing your job as a heel.
Yeah, well, and, you know, the other side of it, too, you know, you guys are badasses and you win all your matches. I'm like, well, actually, if you watch all our matches, I'm like, we never technically won a match. Every single time we were the champion, we cheated. We never won a match. We never pinned a guy 1, 2, 3. Not once did we ever do that as champions. All a part of pissing off everybody.
Yeah, you know, the only time a heel should ever win clean like that is if it's a squash. You know, if you're out there just, you know, wrestling the two guys and breaking them in, okay, you can beat them clean. But if you're in a legitimate feud, I mean, you're using foreign objects, or if you got a manager who's helping you or she's helping you, you know, I mean, there's so many ways to win a match as a bad guy or a heel that don't involve you actually winning the match. You know, I mean, technically, yeah, okay, I pinned you 1, 2, 3, but, you know, I hit you with this. My manager pulled your leg, or, you know, my manager distracted you to the ref and I hit you with something, you know, or you know, there's a low blow involved, or I sprayed something in your eyes. You know, just a million ways to do it as a heel without actually legitimately beating a guy with a wrestling move. And that, you know, that's another thing that's gone by the wayside. And you'll notice, you know, in every match you watch now, the guy hits his finisher.
Yeah.
No matter what, you know, the guy going over always hits his finisher. Very, you know, and there are occasions here and there where, you know, there's a roll up or you get a win like that. But, you know, even as a heel, you roll the guy up and you yank on the tight.
Mm-hmm.
So you grab the rope, you know, that's kind of the lost art of the business that I don't think we're ever going to see back. Cause I don't think fans notice it. You know, it's just something that's gone.
Yeah, well, and, you know, like I said, I a lot of what I did in the ring after training with you and, you know, all the heel, the dirty tactics that I used were all, you know, old WCW stuff. It wasn't WWF, you know, it was WCW because those guys, you know, with the going into the different territories, I think you had to survive, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the funniest thing I ran into, you know, obviously you and I went through the section where high spots became the norm. And now obviously you could do a few of them. I couldn't do any of them. I'm not getting up on the ropes or hurricanrana anybody or anything like that. That's not happening for me. My last feud at what was Fire Pro Wrestling, which was run by my good friend Steve, who passed away from cancer, I got in a feud with a wrestler by the name of Cade Lee. We would get together before the match, and he'd go, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do absolutely nothing. He's like, okay, let's do that. We would get in the ring. We would, you know, go to lock up, and he would run away from me because he was the heel. I would get the crowd clapping and starting to chant chicken. We were super over and didn't do anything in the ring. You know, the champ would go out there, and he would jump off the top rope and, you know, do these flips and that. And, you know, they would cheer for him, but not anywhere close to like they cheered from us. He'd come back, and he would ask me how we did it. And I said, it's simple. The crowd is here to cheer, to clap, to root for you. You know, they're going to be, you know, be thrilled when you do these big high moves, but they're not involved in it. You know, I go out there and it's crowd interaction because I can't do those things. You know, I'll back a guy in the corner and I'll go, do you want me to punch him in the face? Well, of course they're going to say yes. You know, and it's real, easy, basic stuff that, you know, A, you no longer see on TV, so guys don't do it. And honestly, I don't even know if it's taught anymore. You know, I know a couple people who own schools and run schools, but they've never asked me to come in and work with their guys. So I guess they're a little afraid that I would probably be too hard on them because you know what a Big Jack practice is like. So I don't know if they're teaching it, and I don't go to the shows anymore, so I don't know what kind of product is out there. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's just kind of a lost art that I don't think we'll see back in the business for a long time.
No, we won't. And, you know, because with the big shows, the crowd participation is they paid all to get there. But, you know, like you said, people hated losing. The other thing they hated was being the first match. And for a while, the one company we were with, you know, made us the first match every time, and they ended up having to stop because we would get such a huge crowd reaction that nobody could live up to it for the rest of the night. So they had to quit putting us in the open. And putting us in the open was a form of punishment because we didn't follow all the rules that they set that they themselves didn't follow. So go figure.
Yeah, we used to, when I was doing that thing with Cade Lee, they used to make us the opener so we would get the crowd going.
Yeah.
You know, this way you had something right off the bat to kind of get them into it, which is a good deal. But, yeah, I always laughed when guys are like, oh, man, I don't want to be the first guy out. And I'm like, I'll do it. You know, get me in there, get me out of there. I can change and be, you know.
Hang out.
I'll be in my street clothes before intermission, and I can relax, and I'm done for the night. You know.
So. Well, and, you know, it was funny because as a heel, I was the only one who practiced it because I didn't go out during intermission to mingle.
Yeah. Well, I was always a face, so it was okay for me. I was rarely a heel. You know, the only time I had that heel run when I was with your manager. So, and he's your manager, just so you know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then kind of circling back to the not wanting to lose, the company we were at, my very last match, I had to job out to, a.k.a. lose, to a kid who probably only had a few months under his belt training. I think it was one of his first matches. And, you know, we went through it, got it over with. I let him get the roll-up on me. You know, I was angry, threw him out of the ring, blah, blah, blah. And the promoter at the end of the night, you know, thanked me. And I was like, oh, well, that's what you booked. So, you know, I don't, why are you thanking me? You booked the kid to go over. You know, I'm like, I put him over and, you know, we did the job. And he goes, yeah, well, not everyone would have did that. And some, you know, there's people here that would have changed the outcome of the match knowing it's their last time here.
Oh, yeah.
So I really appreciate you putting the kid over. I was like, yeah, no problem. I'm like, it's not real. You know,
and that's
not like there's a,
that's like record to think about. Cause that never would have happened when I started guys changing the outcome. No. You would have got beaten a lot. So,
yeah.
You know, and well, you know, it's funny, you know, that you and I talk about this because, you know, Shamba Stu was a huge wrestling fan back in the day. And, you know, like his version of wrestling and what we know are two totally different things. You know, like they would wrestle 45 minutes to an hour and, you know, guys would actually take a headlock and that would be the basis of the match. They would take it down to the mat. And they would literally work the mat for 10 or 12 minutes in this hold. You know, and like to me, when I think about that, you know, that's totally just beyond belief to me that that's how the matches used to be set up. But, you know, that's how they worked and that's what the fans wanted. You know, and obviously, you know, it's evolved from that. But, you know, I mean, just the image of a guy taking a hold or working a hold for that length of period of time is just insane to me. You know, but again, that was the style and you know, that's what it used to be. You know what I mean? Now if they do that, the fans would be screaming boring before you got to the two-minute mark.
Well, you know, and one of the things that always killed me was the fact that, you know, everyone really dogged Hulk Hogan and that he was not a wrestler. And, you know, as time went on, you know, because of the WWE product, and then when he was in the WCW NWO era, he was pretty old. But, man, I went back and I found old matches when he was in Japan against Antonio Inoki. And, I mean, you had to wrestle in Japan. You didn't. You couldn't get away with that American-style BS over there. You know, so it was pretty interesting to be able to see him kind of, you're like, oh, my God, he actually wrestles. He does headlocks and takedowns and hip tosses and, you know, all that stuff that you learn in basic training.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously, you know, when he came here, you know, or when he was, you know, WWE champion or when he was in the AWA and his name was really starting to get out there, you know, he didn't need to wrestle to, you know, to get over. He needed to be Hulk Hogan. You know, he needed to be the hero. You know, he needed to, you know, do the big boot and do the leg drop. And, you know, those were the things people wanted out of him. You know, and if he would have wrestled, I don't know if it would have worked as well.
No, it wouldn't have. Well, and
so, yeah,
in one of the greatest moves he coined, or, you know, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, was the Hulk up. I mean, you know, if used correctly, I mean, I'll never forget we worked with that one kid who was the nerd gimmick, and he's like, well, you know, we had a couple of minutes in there, and he's like, what do you guys want to do? And I'm like, well, we'll just do whatever. I go, but when we call it, you know, we're going to do the Hulk up. And he's like, what? I'm like, dude, just do it. Go for it. I don't know if we started it or if he'd done it before. And, you know, we just went on around the ring and it got the crowd, you know, he was the nerd gimmick. And he ended it with the, you know, the Poindexter laugh and pointed in our face and then just, you know, took over. And, you know, I didn't care that he was beating me up then because, you know, the crowd was eating it like candy. And it was just so much fun to be a part of that. I think you were there that night.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I was somewhere, you know. But, yeah, no, he had a – yeah, I remember that kid. He had a fun gimmick. I think he – sadly, I think he ended up getting seriously injured in a match doing something stupid.
No.
So – you know, just unfortunately one of those things that happen in the business, you know.
Oh, and just a side note before we run out of time, my wife just informed me that our governor of the great state of Illinois has said that he's not going to allow any sporting events through the end of summer. Allegedly.
He's not gonna allow any ball? He's not going to allow anyone.
You know, big gatherings. So sports events are going to be out of the picture.
Okay. Oh, geez. So.
Well, the White Sox better give me my $30 then.
The Cubs and the Sox are playing all road games. Till then, you know, that's going to be the deal.
Crowdless games, Big Jack. Crowdless games.
Yeah. There you go. So. This kind of thing. Hey, all right, look at that. That wraps up my Power of WrestleCon. So, no, unfortunately, it's sports on radio. It's a kind of demolishing that. But, hey, we hope you enjoyed it. And remember, fans will see you long weekend out. So, Thomas, too, is here for tomorrow. And we're here by the blog. While we're going, what you need to do is sportsonradio.com. Go catch up on the blog that you've been reading yesterday. Just a link. Get over to the Facebook page and give that a like. And remember, the Twitter feed is at Sports Talk Radio. Of course, feel free to look down on that by the way. We're out there as well. And if you stop on and listen to this live, thanks for doing that. But if you can listen to the podcast, go on over to community.com. You know the deal. You can listen whenever you want. All right, have a good day.
SportsTalkRadio.com.